KPCW News Time now, 8:15. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we reported, the Jordanelle Special Services District assessment for the Wasatch County Fire District went away at the end of last year. As a result, taxes were increased for all Wasatch County residents. In the studio with an update on that, as well as some other fire issues, I've got Wasatch County Fire District Chief Ernie Giles. Good morning.
Good morning.
So how much did taxes go up as a result?
We went after, $900,000 on a countywide tax increase. It was spread out. The assessment area had been just basically billing Jordanelle residents in that basin for a five-year period, and it had sunsetted at the end of 2017.
Okay, and was that to in order to build the new Jordanelle Mayflower Station and staff it?
It was, and to be able to staff and pay for it. And back in the day when it started, there was no structures there, and the county commission at the time decided to charge by an ERU basis to the developers. And since then, we went to a value the last assessment we went for, and then since then, now it's sunsetted and spread out throughout the county. The biggest reason, there's about a third of the general tax comes out of that Jordanelle Basin.
So the taxes are based on property values. It's kind of a line item on the property tax bill?
It is, yeah. We're a separate taxing entity, the fire district.
Right, so really just the more expensive the property, the more you pay.
Correct, yeah.
Do you charge impact fees as well?
We do. We're actually in the process of redoing the impact fees needs assessment, station location. We're actually under contract with a firm out of the state of Washington, and we're probably about a third of the way through that process. We're hoping by the end of June we will have some results there. They're also looking at combined and fire and EMS. Currently, right now, they're a separate entity, and they're looking at the district actually runs the ambulance 7 days a week, 6 to 6 in the Heber Valley, as well as a full-time station at the Jordanelle.
All right. So at this point, you don't have any of those results then from that needs assessment?
We don't. We're just in the process of getting information to the firm, and they will come down and, you know, look to area over and then present that to the advisory board that was created about a year ago, and then to the fire board, and then on to the county council.
All right. What's that costing to do?
I think that it's right around $51,000 is what we've contracted with this firm.
Okay. You had mentioned that it would also kind of identify the need for facilities. How many fire stations do you have at this point?
Yeah, there's a station in Walsburg, which is a little community on the south end of the county. We have one in Midway, a fairly new station there, Heber, the Jordanelle, and then one in Timberlakes up on the east side of Heber.
And at this point, you have no idea where you might need a new one?
Just call volume-wise, it looks like a possibility of having another one in the basin. There's a lot of development that's proposed. The Mayflower development is actually probably going to start cutting some ski runs this summer. I've met with them on some fire issues, and there's just a lot of the Jordanelle Boulevard, if any of them's familiar with that, that has actually been funded by the legislature to actually get started this summer, which will connect 40 and 248 through the basin. So that will be a big improvement.
So second one then would be closer to the kind of the Black Ridge Rock area?
Yep, Black Rock,
okay,
correct.
Black.
Yeah, it comes out just below Black Rock there, if people's familiar with that, where the Lumberyard and Browns Canyon Road connects. It's be about a half a mile below that.
Okay. And I know you'd been concerned about just kind of burning out your EMS crew. It's mostly volunteer, you know?
Correct. Yes, we're actually in the process. We had interviews on Monday to actually hire some full-time employees. We're going to try to go full-time the 1st of June in Heber Valley. And at that time, they'll be at the Midway station. During the day, they'll be stationed out of the Heber station. So we're hopefully trying to relieve some of that pressure off our volunteers.
Yeah. So all of the fire stations themselves, so are fully staffed 24/7?
No, just the Jordanelle is the only 24/7 currently right now. But come the 1st of June, we will be able to staff the Heber station 24/7.
Okay, we're talking just with the emergency crews.
Correct.
But the firefighters, are the fire stations staffed with firefighters then 24/7?
Not currently, no. We're just volunteer up till now. Starting in June, they will be a 24-hour. But the rest of these stations are just volunteer stations. If we have them stationed in Midway, Wallsburg firefighters that can respond to the stations.
Wow. So will the needs assessment then include the staffing needs? And I guess, I mean, you see so much change in Wasatch County, but that volunteer staffing really no longer viable, huh?
It is huge, yeah. The call volume is just on a straight line, per near vertical on the calls that we are getting, not so much on the fire side of it as the medical side. It's with the community growing, that's the reason we're going to have to go to this full-time station in Heber to actually try to relieve and try to be able to keep what volunteers we do have.
So it sounds like you're probably going to need another tax increase, right, to pay for all of that?
Well, the last fall when we had the hearing, that was the comment that I'm probably going to be back. I mean, I hate to tax the people, but, I mean, emergency services is a service that everybody, when they call 911, they expect somebody to be there. So it's a challenging era right now in the district to keep the balance, try to keep the taxes low. We're actually purchased a new apparatus, an aerial apparatus, a ladder, as people call it. We took possession of that in February. We have it pretty well equipped and going to put it in service in the next couple of weeks. And that thing was, you know, $1 million. So for our small budget, it was a great investment to have.
So how do you evaluate your fire and emergency needs? I mean, is it based on just the number of households or the population or the call volume? Or?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a combination of all three of those. I mean, a call volume, where these developments are going in and what they're going to bring with them. I mean, like these hotel sites, it's being talked about in the Jordanelle Basin as well as in the Heber Valley. We just had a new one completed last fall, a new hotel, and so they're getting to where their hikes and just the call volume with visitors increases the time and that we have to spend doing that.
All right. So again, that needs assessment you expect in the next, 6 months?
Yeah, we should be set, you know, in the next 6 months. And on our impact fee, that hasn't been addressed in over 10 years. And so we're kind of behind the curve there of trying to capture some of that money to actually, you know, help with the tax burden with the people that's there.
And then the budget sessions would begin later this fall. I think you're on a calendar year.
They are, yeah. We generally will start our pre-budget in September, October, November. This year I started a little early. Just the sheer fact is, as I was going after this tax increase.
All right. Now, with Park City purchasing the Bonanza Flat open space, the Brighton Estate Homeowners Association president told us that he anticipates more building happening up there. He says no home building permit has been issued since 2006. Is that because the fire district can't service the area?
It's a combination. There's lots of issues in Brighton Estates. They do not have currently a water system, so nor a sewer system, so there's no services up there for us to actually be able to battle fire. And it is in a urban interface, and if any of you has been through there, the roads are substandard, I mean, most of the ones there are two track, and I was delighted when the county created a special service district up there for water, but since have dismantled that. I was hoping that would be a way that everybody could achieve fire protection in that area. As everybody's well aware, the Montage is just a rock throw away from this subdivision, and there's roughly about 400 lots in there, plus some mining claims. The Mayflower owns a pretty good chunk up in the middle of Brighton Estates, and so I was delighted to see Park City step up to, because there was over 400 ERUs, I think, issued on this piece of property that they bought for open space, and it will help. You know, I don't know that Brighton Estates is going to be able to grow without some connectivity. I know they've had their issues up there. I know I've been made out to be the guy that's held the permits up, which technically I have, just because of public safety. I mean, we have a medical call there, and lucky enough, the Park City Fire and the fire chief has been willing to work with us on a reciprocal agreement that helps us out up there. We've had a couple of fires up there in the last couple of years, and even Unified Fire came across the hill to help out. So it's awesome that we can all work together to make this thing work.
Yeah, so that's how it works now. I mean, if a call were to come, it would be Park City's Silver Lake station probably be responding, huh?
They're the closest, and they actually came up on the fire there. I mean, they were Johnny on the spot. I mean, they brought an ambulance, and our crews was there, Unified, but it's gives you a somewhat of comfort to know that there's a station that close, and we have a good working relationship with Park City Fire.
So what do you just build then for the services, or how does that work?
Yeah, generally speaking, if Park comes over, I mean, it's not like they're over there every day. And so this reciprocal agreement, generally we don't exchange any money. It's generally done as, you know, help each other out. I know I've used them in the Jordan L Basin when we had a couple of those big fires. I called and the chief sent his engines to help us out. And same way with South Summit. You know, our neighbors, even Spanish Fork, Wasatch County runs over to Soldier Summit, as most folks know, and so they help us on that end, too.
Yeah. Well, it seems like Wasatch Fire District kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot here, because there's no water system there, now no special service district. I mean, we've kind of got a feud between the property owners themselves, those who want to be able to develop their property and would need to have the water, sewer, and road system intact, and others who just want to leave it as it is.
As it is, correct, yeah. Most of the folks have a cabin up there. Back when this was designed, it was designed as a dry subdivision, and some has purchased water, drilled some wells, but water in that area, well drilling anyway, is very difficult. I mean, they have to go way deep, and I've tried my best to try to get them to work together, because you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's a divided division up there. The ones that have it don't want to see it change. The ones that own property would love to build their cabin or home on it. And it's a tough balancing act. I know the county council has tried to work as best as they can. I know they were in on a gate issue just a week or so ago. Some want the gate locked, some don't want it locked. If there's a gate up, Wasatch County requires that an SOS system be placed on the gate so that police, ambulance, and fire can actually get through there with their sirens. So those are, I mean, there seems like there's lots of issues up there.
Well, and I think one of the others, you know, that Mark Fisher would argue, again, that the president of the Brighton Estates Homeowners Association is that the property owners there are paying over $100,000 in property taxes and receive not a single service.
Correct, yeah. And Mark's been very proactive up there. He's been awesome to work with. He's kind of spearheaded to try to improve these things, but it seems like when he does, the other portion that doesn't want anything cuts his feet from out from under him. So I don't know what the answer is, but we do have to have fire protection in that area. for any building permits to be issued.
Yeah, one of the arguments also made is that given, you know, that they're paying property taxes, not being able to access, I mean, you not being able to access with a tanker, I mean, maybe you could just buy an all-wheel drive vehicle and get up into the neighborhoods.
Yes, and that has been talked about, but the road systems in there are, some of them are not even where the roads are platted, and so there's some issues there. They actually drive across people's property currently right now, these two tracks. But a 911 call comes in. I mean, it's difficult to take even a $150,000, $200,000 ambulance and go bouncing through the trees and over the logs to try to get to this person that's actually needing our help besides the fire end of it, because our equipment's a lot bigger than, you know, an ambulance. And so an all-wheel drive, that's kind of what we're looking at purchasing now, these pumpers. But even so, I mean, just the remote area, the steepness of the grade, Wasatch County has been proactive. It used to be gravel here just a few years ago. Since then, they hauled some rotomill in and went in and laid asphalt to it. So up Pine Canyon Road, it's actually a pretty decent road. And then from this Park City side is even, you know, better. So,
okay. Be remiss by not mentioning the fact that the Project for Deeper Understanding will be hosting a community discussion a week from tomorrow about wildland fires, mega fires like we saw in California. What's your concern for this summer? Not a great snow year, things drying out already?
Correct, yeah. What happens in the fire end when we don't get a lot of snow? The grasses that grew last year in 17, generally the snow will compress those down to the ground so that they're not standing, and then the new grass grows up. This year the dry grass is still standing, so it already has a danger. I mean, with the semi crash and burn we had in Strawberry, it was amazing to see how much of that grass burnt before we could cut it off. And this is early in the season and at an elevation of 8,000 feet. So it's going to be a great concern. I mean, with this moisture this spring, I love the moisture, but along with the moisture brings tall grasses, and then hot summer dries it out, and these southwest slopes are just prone for it. So hopefully everybody will be vigilant and cautious this year.
Okay, I'm going to leave it there. Ernie, thanks for your time. Thanks for driving over.
Thank you.
Ernie Giles is the chief of the Wasatch County Fire District. 8:34 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the 2018 edition of the Park City Follies opens Friday, April 20th. Several of the shows already sold out, so don't wait if you're interested. On the phone to give us a preview of what to expect is one of the writers and the MC for the production, Tom Clyde. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, Leslie. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. So I've seen the ad. This year's theme is the Housing Games, a take on the Hunger Games. Who's your heroine? And if it's Park City, it couldn't be Katniss. It has to be Dogness, huh?
Well, we didn't follow it quite that literally, but our hero is a single mom working three jobs who marries a fireman and wins it all and then isn't so sure she's won.
Okay, so that's kind of the theme you play. Can you tell us a little bit more about that in terms of what to look forward to?
Well, we've got a, let's see, the plot lines are the contest for the Housing Games, and it's sort of a game show feel about it as they compete for the last affordable unit. Then we've got the second homeowners who are, I think we've sort of captured our relationship with the second homeowners in town fairly well. They're paying all the bills, they're providing opportunities for jobs and businesses that the locals provide, but at the same time it's driving all of the prices of housing up to where the locals can't afford to live here. And so there's a real tension between the second homeowners and the locals, but at the same time the second homeowners are searching for that authentic small town experience that is increasingly hard to find if nobody lives here.
So talk a little bit about the process for making this happen.
Oh, gee, it's surprisingly complicated, and yet happens very smoothly. We start Actually, we started this year in August with a barbecue at my house and the creative team trying to guess last August what would be the hot topic in town 8 or 9 months later. I think we guessed about right this year. That's always a concern. But once we've got the topic in mind, we just kind of stew on it for a little while. And then starting September, we have Folly's Home Evening at Terry Moffitt's house once a week. And just start, you know, working with ideas. And you can't write a script by committee, so I'll take it home and see what I can do with the ideas that came out of our meetings. And, you know, then we meet again and we push and pull and adjust this, you know, and that. And then it just sort of starts ripening into a script that is pretty one-dimensional, and you throw it at the cast members, and they take it and turn it into what it is. I mean, watching it last night at rehearsal, which is really only our second rehearsal, this group has once again taken the characters and turned them into real, live, living people, and it's just amazing to watch how they get that done.
Yeah. Now, it's all volunteers. You guys don't make any money off of this. Why do you continue to do it?
Because it's so much fun. And it really is the amount of work that goes into it is astounding. I don't know that it would be possible if I had a normal job. And all of, you know, Rick, Terry, and Paul, and Josh Mann and Andy Sear, who are the other creative people on it, they all work real life jobs and, you know, are productive members of society, and I just kind of hang out. So, but having that kind of time available is essential to having it happen.
Yeah. And then you also have a cast of what, 30, 40 people?
There's probably 30 people in it, not counting the folks in the videos. And of course, the videos are like an entirely separate production. The goal on those is to pick up topics that didn't logically fit with the main script, or to pick up people who realistically can't give us the entire month of April to be in the show. So we've got probably a half dozen videos that are getting pretty close. You're starring in one of them, and we appreciate your efforts. And then we've got some others touching on just fun topics around town or little quirks that make Park City, Park City.
Okay. And then also for the last couple of years, the Follies offered a part on stage as kind of an auction item for KPCW's highest bidder. Is that person participating or?
I think what happened is that she got the part and was hoping that she could do it as a short piece in a video, and didn't realize that what she won was to give up a month of her life. And so I think she has deferred and may try and do it next year, but is not with us this year just because of the time commitment that she didn't understand.
Yeah. Well, y'all do such a great job at keeping the pulse on what is percolating here in Park City. I guess I would think it was like, guy, does it just the well run dry? But I guess not, huh?
Well, you know, every year we kind of look around and say, what haven't we done? And you try not to repeat things. And it becomes increasingly difficult, although, Park City's kind of a self-parody. I knew we had kind of jumped the shark on Easter when I went skiing, and here's the Easter Bunny, and Courtney from Eats is there dressed as a giant carrot passing out fresh vegetables on Easter. And I thought, wow, you know, you can't even get a chocolate egg on Easter around here anymore. It's just...
Well, again, Follies opens Friday, April 20th. I checked the website earlier this morning. There are tickets still available for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, April 24th, 25th, and 26th. Everything else sold out, so... Good job, because the money raised goes to support the Egyptian, yeah?
Yeah, it all goes to the theater, and the cost of the production is extremely low. The cast members, part of what they enjoy doing about it is providing their own costumes, and so there's not a whole lot of expense to the theater in terms of production, and it turns out to be a pretty pretty successful fundraiser for them in addition to just a good time.
Okay. ParkCityShows.com if people are interested. Looking forward to it, Tom. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Leslie. See you there. Bye.
That's Tom Clyde again, one of the members of the creative team for the Park City Follies, also the MC of the event. Newstime now, 8:41. KPCW Newstime, 8:42. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, after several delays, the new Camas Services Building finally opened last week, hosting the library, the DMV, and the health department. In the studio with a preview of the large list of services that the Camas Health Department offers, I have Health Department PIO Derek Sidaway. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So everything's up and running now?
Everything is up and running. In fact, we just had a WIC clinic last week and it was packed. So we're really excited to begin offering services in the Camas area in our new space.
Okay. So what do you want residents then of South Summit to know about the new space?
The biggest thing is just to encourage them to come check the space out. It's really nice. It's been in the works for a while now, and we've taken the time to make it a really quality area. So you've got the library downstairs, and then upstairs in our space, we have the health department and the services we offer there, as well as a mental health space. So there's, in the health department, there's the immunization clinics, women's health services, a variety of screenings, the WIC services that we offer there, communicable diseases, baby your baby, and a lot of other things as well.
Yeah. Any idea what is the most used service?
Some of our bigger services are the regular immunization clinics that we do, and then also the women's health services that we offer in the space. Those are probably our two largest.
Yeah. And so why would somebody go here as opposed to just a physician's office? Is it because of the low cost or?
So we have a variety of services that are scalable based on income, so income qualified that we offer. Especially in the women's health and the children's health areas.
Okay. And then another pickup. So at all of the health, like North Summit, South Summit, and Park City, they all have similar then services?
Mm-hmm. Most of our services are offered at all three areas. A few just come out of the Round Valley office just because of the size of it. But we have, like, for instance, the WIC clinic goes to the Colville office and also in the Camas office, and the immunizations are offered at all three offices as well. Birth certificates, you can call, but if you need to come in for certain things, that has to be done through the Round Valley office.
Okay, and what are the hours?
The hours are 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. and 1 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Monday through Friday?
Monday through Friday, yes.
Okay, all right. And then you've also were telling me about a number of health promotions that you have done. Is this out of the Camas or is this out of just the health department?
So that's both. We have some services that we'll do out of the Camas Health Department, the South Summit Services Building as well, but also stuff that we do in schools. So a lot of our services that health promotion works on are involved with the schools. So the peer leader program, Random Acts of Kindness, Stepping On, which is a senior falls program. Those classes will be held in the new South Summit Services Building. Food bank, food drives that we do over there, different types of tobacco and nicotine programs that we do in the schools, the Frontline Blue Light event that we partnered with the Sheriff's Office, that also took place in Camas. We did an ATV safety class at the Camas Rodeo Grounds, and a variety of other services, Safe Kids Day. I could go on for quite a while.
Yeah. Again, all of that information then is on the health department's website, or is there a specific link for the South Summits?
So if you go on the health department's website, right on our front page, if you scroll down, we'll have information specifically about the Camas address, hours that are open. The services are broken down. It's broken down by service rather than location. But if there's anything specific that's in one building and not another, that will be listed on the website. And that's summitcountyhealth.org.
Okay. Anything else you want to add?
Once again, we just want to encourage people to come check the space out. We're really glad that it's open and excited for people to see it and come visit us.
Great. Derek, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Derek Sidaway is the Public Information Officer for Summit County Health Department. KPCW News Time now, 8:47. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Park City Municipal has committed to spending some $40 million over the next several years to build affordable housing. Blake Christian thinks he has a solution. He joins me now in the studio to talk about Park City Base Camp. It's a company that hopes to lease some 45-foot shipping containers made into livable spaces. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the company. Is it a new business only for Park City, or are we going to see Base Camp Aspen, Base Camp Tahoe?
Well, we hope in all those places. But I started by, you know, trying to at least put a little bit of a dent in the situation we have here in Park City. So we're not representing that this is the solution, but just a solution. And so we've converted a 45-foot container into a two-bedroom, four-bed residence. It's completely off-grid, solar-powered, compost toilet, so you can put it anywhere.
Okay, so you have it. Is it still staged out behind Utah Film Studios?
Right. It's there for at least today. We are in the process of moving it probably somewhere else in town, but possibly down to Salt Lake. We also feel it's a pretty solid solution for the homeless. And so once we're done here, we're actually taking it to Southern California. We're in discussions with the County of LA as well as Long Beach.
So you're also based out of Long Beach with a different firm?
Right. My day job, I'm a tax CPA, but this was just, you know, something that I came up with a few years ago.
Okay. So you apparently took some Park City County, or maybe Summit County, some ski resort representatives out for a visit recently?
Yeah, we've had 300 people through in the last 2 weeks. And so we've had representatives of, you know, county council. The mayor's been out. And we had the three fire department representatives that came through just checking it out for safety features, and they were very helpful, and they liked the design quite a bit too.
Yeah. So, what was their reaction then?
Well, they I don't want to completely speak for them, but they were very positive. They thought it was a great design. Again, they made certain suggestions like smoke alarms and carbon monoxide sensors, but other than that, you know, very positive. And we talked about when we do our next version of it, that we would engage them in city planning to make sure that meets everybody's needs.
So these are the containers that we would see on the big old ships between here and China?
Right. And on your local freeway. So there's tens of millions of them out there. So this is about the greenest project we know for residents. So we're using shipping containers. We're using sustainable materials inside. We use bamboo, cabinetry, which is beautiful. We use recycled materials for the sinks. And it's extremely, extremely low energy usage.
Yeah. So talk about some of the other amenities. I mean, like running water, showers, and toilets.
Right, so we have a full-size shower in there, separate toilet area. It's a compost toilet, so it's a bio-remediating toilet, so it breaks down the components in there over a couple of days. And so it's, you know, it's very, very efficient and practical.
All right, so it's not hooked up to a sewer system.
Correct, but we can build them, you know, what we call shore power and plugged into the sewer system where those are available, but we didn't want to have that as a limiting factor as we showed the prototype.
Okay, so explain that to me. I mean, how would it connect to a sewer system?
You know, it would, again, my main vision is that these would be, we would have a cluster of these, maybe a whole community of these, certainly not in town, but, you know, a little bit out of town and on vacant land. And the beauty is we can have these for a couple of years. The way that they're mounted and everything, they can be pulled out, and within a couple of days, you would never even know they were there. So it's a much more environmentally conscious and flexible structure. So if they did have sewers, if they had water supply, electrical, we can plug into all that.
All right, because talking with Planning Director Bruce Erickson from Park City yesterday, basically telling me that these would never be allowed at the base of Park City Mountain Resort mm-hmm. unless they were connected to a sewer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's easily done, and it actually lowers our cost of producing them. To make them off-grid is quite a bit more.
Okay, so in terms of Wasatch County, I mean, would they have? Do they have similar restrictions as Park
yes,
City does?
Yes, I mean, there are, you know, River's Edge, for example. These could go in immediately. They're already zoned for this, but other areas would need some exemptions. Again, my proposal is more a, you know, just a short term exception. So that they can try them out for a couple of years, and then if the community embraces them, then we can, you know, talk longer term zoning adjustments. And there are things in the code, the building code for experimental buildings, which we feel we can fall under.
So what's the cost of one of these?
Well, that first prototype is pretty expensive, but we're, you know, we think we can, you know, depending on whether it's off grid or on grid. I mean, the prices can range anywhere from 75. It's like buying a car. It could be 75,000 to 150,000, depending on what bells and whistles that you want. A lot of people look at the cost per square foot and you know, panic over that. But when you build small, there's diseconomies of scale. So your cost per square foot goes up. But everything, when you buy one of these or lease it, it's all, everything is built in. So you're not having any cost to furnish it. So that's a big difference. Plus, this one is completely green, no energy costs. It'll actually produce more energy than you'll ever use.
Yeah, and I think somebody figured out, I mean, based on a $100,000, that's about $315 a square foot, which is pretty pricey.
Right, right. But by Park City standards, that's not that bad. Certainly down in the valley, it's high.
Yeah. So again, these would be, you would sell them, or you would maintain ownership and then rent them, or?
Yeah, our model is primarily a leasing structure, and plus that lets the user try it out. You know, I mean, this is kind of uncharted waters, and but we are in discussions. The 300 people that came through, probably 100 asked about buying them, and so. Certainly, you know, we're not, you know, going to completely eliminate the possibility of a sale.
Yeah. So what's the difference between this and a mobile home and or a RV?
Okay. Well, a mobile home or an RV, let's just say that you pull out the propane heating element. During the winter, they would die in there because they're not very well insulated. They're noisy. Ours, I'd welcome people to come and see it. When you stand in there and we're by, you know, the highway and the freeway, you hear no noise because we have about 6.5 inches of insulation in there. And it can be 10 degrees outside. It'll be 66 to 70 inside. So they're very, very well insulated. Also, when you move them, and we have solid doors, you know, you go into an RV or a trailer, it's hollow doors, everything's made cheaply, everything's made light because they're worried about miles per gallon. We can put 60,000 pounds in these. We could make everything out of lead. It wouldn't really matter. But so there's some, you know, some big differences. And the durability of these things, these shipping containers will last, you know, 50 years and, you know, very little maintenance on the outside.
Yeah, what is the outside made out of? Is it metal or
metal.
Is it?
It's metal. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. So, if somebody wanted to come out then today before noon or something, they'd have a chance to walk through it.
Right. So, if I can leave my cell phone number, is the easiest. If you text or call me 562-305-8050, and then, you know, even next week we'll tell you wherever it is. It's kind of like a pop up house. It's mobile.
All right. So and in terms of doing business, I mean, have you made any business happen at this point? Or
well, we've had
locally, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, both the ski resorts have had, you know, high level representatives come through and they were very complimentary of it. And so we're in discussions with both the resorts. I was out at out in Camas yesterday for another commercial operation that would like to have 5 of these, you know, for their particular business. So, you know, we don't have firm orders, but we have a lot of discussions. So it's the community's been very, very supportive of it.
Yeah. 320 square feet, 4 people. That's pretty tight, though.
Well, but it's a lot more room than they have now. Most of them are four or more in about 220 square feet. So this is actually fairly spacious compared to their normal living conditions.
Yeah, can you give me the dimensions?
Well, it's eight feet wide and 40 feet long, and but 9.5 feet high. So we like to say that it's over 3,000 cubic feet. It sounds a lot better than just square footage. But it actually, again, I encourage people to come walk through it because spatially, it's a lot more roomy than you would think. I'm a little claustrophobic in tight spaces, and I could live in there.
Interesting. Okay, Blake, hey, thanks for coming by today.
Thank you.
Blake Christian, again, the project developer with Park City Base Camp. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.